From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition.
California companies interested in entering or expanding in China, or Chinese companies seeking investment opportunities in California, was the focus of Governor Brown's recent trade mission to China. Will the governor's efforts mean more exports to China and more Chinese investment in California? What impact will opening California's new trade and investment office in Shanghai, the first formal trade presence by California in China since 2003, have on China-California trade? And are there specific companies like Apple or industries like agriculture that stand the most to gain by increased trade with China? We'll ask. John Grubb, Chief of Staff of the Bay Area Council, a business-sponsored public policy advocacy organization whose membership includes the 275 largest employers in the Bay Area. Alan Zarenberg, CEO of the California Chamber of Commerce, whose mission includes international engagement to enhance the California economy on behalf of its more than 13,000 business members, and John Myers, political news editor for News 10 in Sacramento, who accompanied the governor on the trip. We'll also hear from John Harris, owner of Harris Farms, a Westside farmer and one of the leading producers of agricultural products in the United States, and Pete Weber, former corporate executive and current leader in California Ford and chairman of the executive committee of the California Partnership for the San Joaquin Valley. Governor Brown's California trade mission, cultivating economic growth.
From Fresno, the Maddie Report, with executive director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. Our guest is John Grubb, chief of staff of the Bay Area Council, the group that sponsored the governor's trade mission to China. Welcome to the Maddie Report.
Thanks, Mark. Nice to be here.
So, can you give our audience some numbers? How big is the trade between California and China?
Well, right now it's about $14 billion a year, but it's growing quickly. It's already, they've surpassed Japan, they've surpassed Korea, and actually if you add in Hong Kong right now, which is technically part of China these days, it's actually our number two trading partner, and it continues to grow. So the country has an expanding middle class. It has, they have a desire for a lot of products that actually California sells. And so we expect a lot from this relationship.
You know, I was reading that it's projected that trade between California and China is going to grow to $60 billion right. by 2020. So we're at $14 billion now. How is that estimate? What's that estimate based on? That trajectory seems pretty steep.
Well, it's on the historical growth that we've seen. So there's a growth of about 12% per year, and that kind of growth will translate to about $60 billion at that point. And you can see the trends. China is moving so fast and growing so quickly. And again, their desire for our food products, products, et cetera.
I was going to ask you about that. Are there certain products that they're particularly interested in?
Yeah. The biggest products right now are technology products. We actually send a bunch of waste product that's recycled in China that's there. It's also agricultural products and then services. So architects, lawyers, management consultants, a lot of these people actually are creative class individuals that come from California. And they're opening offices in China to start to sell their service there.
Well, you helped open an office in China in Shanghai after a 10-year hiatus. What is the impact you think that new trade office is going to have on China-California trade?
Well, we're in a big competition with other states in the United States. And for a while, California was out of the international trade game, at least on a government level. And so this office is supposed to grow jobs in California and grow investment. It's going to do that by bringing Chinese investment, Chinese companies to California, and then help California companies succeed, give them a leg up, help them with government connections, help them work through some of the, it's scary to go to a new country if you're in business. And so it's going to help both ways. So Chinese companies are scared to come to California, and California companies are scared to go to China. This office is supposed to help everybody out and help them with their deals.
Well, this is going to be a public-private partnership between the state, your organization, the Bay Area Council, and some California companies. Yeah. The question is, though, who's going to be driving the agenda here?
Well, it's a true partnership. It's a public-private partnership, which is one of the innovations that California is bringing to this. And so it's going to have the governor and the governor's office are playing already a very strong hand. They're going to help pick who the employees are and set the direction for it and hold everybody accountable, as well as the legislature. Then we have a board of advisors, and they're also investors, so they have a stake in this. Who are business leaders who know the California-China trade relationship. And what's great about that is that the office, its focus, China changes so quickly, these people know where it's going, and so they can help direct the office to focus on the right things.
Yeah, I'm curious, why Shanghai and not Hong Kong or Beijing?
Well, you got to go somewhere. So Shanghai was a great place to start. The Bay Area Council already had an office there, so it was easy to expand that office and be there. But it's also the business capital of China, Shanghai. It's clearly recognized at that. But we're going to be growing. The governor said when we were in Guangzhou, which is a city in southern China, a lot of manufacturing's down there, he said committed to another office there. We're looking at Beijing actually right now and other places. So we should have access to a lot of China.
Now, there were a lot of deals that were announced while he was over there, four deals worth $300 million, and that follows a $1.5 billion deal that was also signed. What can you tell us about those deals?
Well, they really covered a lot of the gamut of California. We have a very broad economy. So, of course, we had this $1.5 billion real estate investment. I actually wrote down some of these so I didn't forget them, but there's an electric bus assembly facility that's going to be in Southern California. There was an urban design deal. There was other real estate investments, particularly in biotech and high tech. There was a pollution cleanup deal that was signed. And then finally, a traffic management deal. We have a lot of traffic here in Los Angeles and then also in the Bay Area, and we've developed some expertise on that and some technology on that, and we're going to be exporting that now to China as well. So pretty interesting stuff. I'd also add, we did a survey of the delegates. There were about 93 delegates, 125 people total that were on the trip, 93 business delegates. We did a survey of them. 90% of them said that they found a deal while they were on the trip. Which is pretty phenomenal. It made the trip seem pretty successful.
So that's a pretty good return on their investment then.
Hopefully. They seem pretty happy with the trip, so yes.
We're talking with John Grubb, Chief of Staff with the Bay Area Council, the group that sponsored the governor's recent trade mission to China. We currently have a pretty significant trade imbalance with China. China sells a lot more to Californians than we do to the Chinese. And now the governor is touting China's role in helping us meet our carbon targets, things like batteries for electric cars, solar cells for solar panels, electric buses, things of that nature. It seems like a lot of money is going out to China, but not a lot of money is coming in. Is that going to make the trade imbalance worse?
Well, China's economy is changing. And so it was one of its draws was inexpensive labor and a lot of in manufacturing and the ability to move product out and back here. But it's the country is developing a very healthy middle class. And then also they have some challenges in terms of pollution, and they have some targets for renewable energy, a whole bunch of different stuff that are products that we sell. So as they get an expanded middle class who can afford better agricultural products, they're going to be drawing on California agriculture. They're going to be drawing on California wine. As they look for solutions for environmental problems, both the products, but then also the services and sort of the knowledge that people have is going to be exporting from California to China. And so we see that balance starting to shift. It's going to be a growing relationship, and then probably it's going to start to shift in our favor.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that we do sell to the Chinese. The biggest one is computers and electronics.
Yeah.
Is there any concern about protecting intellectual property rights as we do more trade with China?
Yeah, of course. So every country that you go into has its own challenges, right? And so in China, one of the challenges is intellectual property rights protection. And in every country that you go into, you need to develop a strategy. And so this trade office that we're opening can help with that. They have some advice, but we don't have a monopoly on that. And there's companies that can help with that. And so as long as you have a strategy to deal with intellectual property rights and how you're going to move them, then you're going to be fine. And so you just kind of have to adjust your way. But sometimes sharing intellectual property is a way to get access to the country. So it has a couple of sides
to
that
coin. Kind of a trust but verify kind of thing.
Sure.
Let's talk about tourism. Major California industry. What's being done to increase tourism?
So tourism is a booming industry. In Chinese tourists coming to California, it was about a million that were coming in 2011, and then by 2015, it's predicted to go to 2 million. So 4 years doubling, and this is China number, so it's going to continue to grow. When Chinese tourists come to California, they tend to spend about $6,000 per person. So this is
my understanding. That's about $1,000 more than the typical tourist in California.
I believe that's true, but I don't know about the statistics, but I'll trust you on it. They're spending a lot of money here, and when Chinese tourists think about the United States, the images that they have in their mind are of the Golden Gate Bridge, of Napa, and of Disneyland. They're not thinking about the other landmarks across the United States. They're flying into L.A., they're flying into San Francisco.
Are they thinking about the three national parks in the San Joaquin Valley?
Sure. Well, we need to work on that. And as a matter of fact, when we were there, they announced a $1 million advertising campaign to try and drum up more tourism. And a lot of the focus was on Yosemite and other national parks that are out there. And that's what the governor was passionate about.
It seems like those kinds of jobs, tourism jobs, are kind of pretty good for semi and unskilled workers. And that's where the hardcore unemployed in the San Joaquin Valley.
Yeah, sure, of course.
What about ag, talking about kind of a valley issue here? $1.7 billion in agricultural exports to China in 2011, almonds, pistachios, wine, walnuts, cotton. But there do appear to be some barriers to selling Chinese, selling California commodities in China. For example, the Chinese prohibit rice from the United States. What are the biggest barriers to selling more California commodities in China?
Well, so China has a domestic agricultural industry, and they've put up some tariffs to try and protect their industry. And so California, and actually the United States, is working to reduce those tariffs. We have some of our own, actually, to be fair. But everybody is trying to reduce that. A lot of California companies can still sell into China. They come in at a premium. But the desire for California products is so high that it's often not a problem. There are other ways. Some companies or agricultural businesses can sell to Hong Kong, and then importers are bringing it actually into China. And so that's sort of where you're going to see a lot of the growth going.
What about attracting Chinese investment in California? How do we go about doing that?
There's a lot of money that's flowing out of China right now, and this is a big opportunity for us to miss. So we can't do that, which is part of the reason why we have this trade office. So those employees that are in China are going to be meeting with large-scale investors and presenting them with a portfolio of projects that they can invest in. They may invest in those, but it also just creatively helps them know where else they can invest in California. And they're there to help. And they can connect them to the government if they have challenges. And the governor, just in the budget, in the May revise, announced what will grow to a $100 million investment fund to sort of help Chinese investors or other investors from other parts of the globe to come into California. So California is showing that they're serious about it, and hopefully we're going to win that money and come here versus Texas or other places.
Okay, last question in the segment. How are we going to know if the governor's trade mission was a success, and do you think there's any takeaways the governor had going to China?
Sure. So I think it's fair to declare it a success. It's an ongoing success. Hopefully it will grow. But the governor brought back $2 billion worth of deals. He signed some great agreements, government-to-government agreements, that are sort of umbrellas that we can operate under for a long time. And then there were a group of delegates that were on there, and as I mentioned previously, 90% of those delegates said that they got an additional deal out of it. So this is pretty successful.
So did it energize the governor in terms of his big infrastructure projects?
This was probably one of the more fascinating things to see, is the governor just got so charged up. This happens to lots of people, so he's not alone, about what's going on in China. He rode on high-speed rail. He saw the cranes everywhere. He saw the pace of things that happened there. And so coming back to California, that kind of excitement hopefully will stay with the governor as we approach, the water project and lots of other construction projects and building things, so that California can continue to innovate and grow and stay, on the leading edge of the world.
Okay, well, great. I want to thank John Grubb from the Bay Area Council for joining us. There appear to be significant opportunities for California businesses to expand to the diverse Chinese marketplace. So what are the prospects and potential pitfalls of increased trade with China? Our guest is Alan Zarenberg, President and CEO of the California Chamber of Commerce. Welcome back to the Matty Report.
Well, it's great to be here. It's a great opportunity to talk to your viewers again.
Great. Well, let's talk about the different markets in China. Which ones seem particularly promising to you?
Well, California has some unique products. We all think about, we import things from China, but there's some great opportunities to export things to China. Obviously, our technology, especially in environmental issues, which they have a great need for, is great. We export a lot of entertainment. Our movies are very popular over there. Agriculture, which is so important to the Central Valley. We have a unique opportunity to, from wine to specialty crops, to find a huge market in China, where there's over a billion people, so many more than a billion. Great opportunities there. And then one other thing that we don't really look at as an export is tourism. Where we attract the Chinese to California, that's really an export of our tourism market there. So there's great opportunities. And with that many people and that many in the middle class that are growing over there, there's great opportunities for California.
Well, what are the hurdles to getting to increase trade with China, to getting into that market?
Well, there are obviously a lot of hurdles, some of which California can control and some of which we can't. So first and foremost, I think the governor's trip to China was very important in terms of establishing a foundation. Because when you deal with foreign countries, they're very important understanding of how protocol works in developing markets, developing relationships. And for many foreign countries, they want to make sure that the leader of a government is involved in doing business with that country. So for the governor to go to China is a very important foundational step to make sure you address those protocol needs that need to be the foundation of an export market.
What else would you like to see the state do to increase trade with China for California
businesses? Well, I think, you know, a lot of things depend on the federal government. So we need to lobby the federal government. So if we're going to open up agricultural markets to China, sometimes we need to open up some of our markets to Chinese, you know, to things that the Chinese export to California and America. So there's a lot of give and take there. We also need to be very engaged in the visa issue, you know, to make sure that the Chinese can have access to visas to come to California because they really want to come here and visit our tourism destination.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about the tourism industry. It's a major California industry, and I was reading some statistics that indicate that Chinese tourists contribute about $1,000 more per day than the typical tourist in California. What can we do to make California even more attractive to more attractive destination for Chinese tourists?
You know, California, first of all, already has the best, impressions that people could have throughout the globe. You know, whether it be our beaches or Yosemite, or Disneyland, or San Francisco, there are so many different attractions in California, and it's known worldwide. But I think what's important is, over there, you have to make sure you work with the government, you make sure they understand that California is opening up its arms to Chinese tourists to come here, and you have to make it easy for them. You have to work with the way they establish, trips to California and trade missions when their states want to come over here. You have to accommodate them.
You know, what about increasing tourism in the San Joaquin Valley? A lot of people don't think about tourism in the San Joaquin Valley in the same sentence, but we have three national parks in close proximity. Is the state doing enough to promote tourism in those areas?
Well, as part of the governor's trip, we had a huge tourism event, and what our California Tourism and Tourist Bureau did, visitcalifornia.com, did was hold an event for the people that plan trips for the Chinese. And what's important is to be able to offer all those packages, to make sure that they understand about Yosemite, about our national parks. And we laid the foundation for that. The governor laid the foundation for that with the trip, and so did Visit California.
Well, let me ask you this. Bottom line, final question. Was your take on the trip, do you think it's going to increase trade and investments from China? And is that ultimately going to be good for California businesses?
There's no question that these kinds of trips are very important. They establish the foundation, they establish the protocol, and you have the leader of California. And, they have more government involvement than we do, but they expect the governor of California to be there to lead the delegation, and that's exactly what happened in this trip.
Well, I want to thank Alan Zarenberg from the California Chamber of Commerce for being here. An unusually small and diligent group of intrepid reporters follow the governor on his trip to China, and one of them is with us today, John Myers, political editor for News 10. Welcome back to the Mattie Report.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, the governor's agenda on the trip, did you get the sense that it was more of a photo op, or was it intentionally packed?
Well, let's put it this way. Jerry Brown wasn't traipsing the Great Wall and stopping and smiling for photos. It was packed, and I do think it was intentionally stacked with a lot of things for a couple of reasons. The first one is keep in mind the history of trade offices of California. If you go back, it's now been 10 years since we've had an international trade office. They were closed for two reasons. One, the state was running short on money or out of money during the budget crisis, and the other one was the sense that they were political patronage deals, that they didn't really amount to a lot in terms of economic activity. And I think the governor wanted to show that this is going to be a different setup, and we can talk about how this is funded because it's different. But also, too, he wanted to show that he was serious about new ties between China and California. We have a long history. He wants a long future, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. This public-private partnership was really at the heart of the trip. It paid for part of the trip. They're helping pay for the office that's being opened in Shanghai. The question is, though, who's making the decisions here about the trade agenda? Is it a situation of he who has the gold makes the rules?
You know, I think some of this will remain to be seen, the details, how it's worked out. I mean, let's keep in mind that the way we have this trade office and this public-private partnership between the state and the nonprofit Bay Area Council out of San Francisco was part of a piece of legislation the governor signed into law last year allowing this partnership to happen. Clearly, the Bay Area Council is out raising money to keep the office open. Clearly, delegates on this trip, there were 125 people on this trip, paid $10,000 a pop to go to China. That helped underwrite the governor's expenses going. I mean, that was completely transparent. And transparency, I paid for my own, or the station paid for mine. But I think that the governor's office is going to have a very big hand in how the office is run, in who the staff are, and how these things happen. And when you talk to the people there, the first and foremost thing they want out of this office is they want someone there on the ground who can get questions answered anytime anybody comes in to do a deal, a business partnership. They don't want a delay. I mean, think about it. It's a 15-hour time difference and everything else. They want somebody there who can represent the state of California's answers. And I think the governor is very hopeful that this is going to be that.
So a one-stop shop, maybe.
Yeah.
All right, what about Chinese innovations and technology? The governor was talking about how important they were for California hitting our carbon targets, things like cheaper batteries for electric cars, cheaper solar photovoltaic cells for solar panels. There's already a trade imbalance with China. Is this going to make that trade imbalance even worse?
Well, trade imbalance, I mean, you know, it depends on what vision you're looking at. Are you looking at the micro? You're looking at the macro, national, global things? You know, and every time we talk to the governor on this trip about larger dynamics between California and the U.S., I mean, China, rather, in the U.S., the governor said, look, I'm not the president. I'm not here doing all of that, even though we know he ran for president three times. I'm here trying to make deals to help California. And so, you know, what the governor wants, when you refer to those things, Mark, I mean, he does. He wants Chinese innovation in some of these issues. We talked about climate change a lot on this trip. The governor signed these formal agreements with the Chinese government on greenhouse gas reduction. One of them, very interestingly, allows at least some of these non-governmental organizations to come in and see if the Chinese are actually meeting their goals. Because we know California has this ambitious plan. And if we do all of this work to reduce our greenhouse gases and China does nothing, then it's all for naught. And so the governor needs help. He needs help on the batteries issue. He needs help on wind and solar. And the Chinese actually had a lot of questions about how California has gotten to where it is. I mean, look at Los Angeles. We know what Los Angeles in the 60s and 70s was with smog. You compare that to China in cities like Shanghai and Guangzhou that we visited. The smog is horrible. And they want to know how we did it. They want to know what our secrets were. So I think there's a lot of room there for a collaboration.
So how are we going to know whether this trip was a success?
Good question, isn't it? I think it depends on your politics, and I think it depends on your goals. You know, there are critics who are going to say that the governor, you know, is out there on a junket, and this is just another one of those trade offices that isn't going to do anything. The governor seemed to talk a lot on the trip and since the trip about a long-term relationship. And if you really look at Chinese culture, not that I knew a lot of it before I went, but when you talk to people when we were there in all of those cities, the Chinese value a long-term relationship. You don't go in and strike a business deal in 10 minutes. It lasts over years. And so I think what when you talk about measuring, it may take several years to measure some of these deals. The governor had some things right out of the gate, a deal in Oakland for development, a deal on an electric bus manufacturing plant in Southern California. But I think the rest of this is going to take some time.
Well, I want to thank John Myers, political editor for News 10, for being here, as well as John Grubbs from the Bay Area Council and Aaron Zarenberg, the CEO of the California Chamber of Commerce.
Up next, we'll talk about the impact of the governor's trip to China on the San Joaquin Valley with John Harris, owner of Harris Farms, one of the United States' leading producers of agricultural products, and Pete Weber, a former corporate executive and leader in California Ford and a chairman of the executive committee of the California Partnership for the San Joaquin Valley.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. What impact will the governor's trade mission to China have on the San Joaquin Valley? We're fortunate to be joined by two Valley representatives who accompanied the governor on his recent trip to China. They are John Harris, a prominent Westside rancher who is CEO and chairman of Harris Farms, a major cattle beef producer selling to Japan and Korea that has been unable to get beef directly into China due to trade restrictions. Harris does exports in almonds, pistachios, and citrus to China, and he believes that China holds a lot of promise for the future of California ag. We also have Pete Weber, former corporate executive and current leader leader in California Forward, as well as chairman of the executive committee of the California Partnership for the San Joaquin Valley. Welcome to the both of you to the Matty Report Valley Views Edition. Well, let's start with what California's been up to in agriculture. California did $1.7 billion in agricultural exports to China in 2011, led by almonds, pistachios, wine, walnuts, and cotton. But it appears that there are some barriers for selling some of California's commodities to China or into China. China, for example, prohibits rice from the United States. So, John, we'll start with you. What are the legal barriers that California growers and businesses face when they try to sell in China?
Well, they're really more diplomatic barriers on trade policy that China has been. They love to sell to export things, and they've been very successful in their overall export to import ratio on U.S. products in total is you know, pretty big ratio. But California is a low-cost producer of many ag commodities that could well be exported to China, and some are. But it's tough to get some commodities into China, like beef. We're selling to virtually every other country but China, and they represent a huge market. We have much higher quality beef than they do. But
so why is that, John? If our beef is so much higher quality, why are we having such a hard time getting it into China? What are the specific barriers?
Well, I don't know. It got to be somewhat of a cause celeb, I think, that they, you know, our various trade missions got in a deadlock. They are taking beef from Canada and I think Australia, but I think the U.S., which I agree with the U.S. policy that wants to have on these phytosanitary standards, that they should be, you know, world standards based on sound science. So apparently some countries kind of cut a separate deal and they got in, like Canada, which has, you know, somewhat similar to beef to the U.S. But I think the beef, just reading between the lines, got to be elevated high in the overall trade mission, and it just didn't ever get done. What's happening is a lot of beef is getting transshipped to China clandestinely, or sort of clandestinely. All of us seems to know about it. This whole gray market deal, it goes through Vietnam and Hong Kong, and there's a lot of basically payoffs and things that happen to get it to end up in Singapore or wherever it ends up. But it's a very efficient market.
Yeah, I want to ask Pete, what do you think the legal barriers are to getting into China?
Well, you know, it's I think there are more political and cultural barriers than there are legal barriers. The opportunities, as John said, are huge. I mean, we've quadrupled our agricultural exports into China in the last 4 years, and I think that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more that we can do, but it's difficult to do business in China, both culturally and politically. Culturally, you have to invest a lot of time in developing a relationship with the Chinese, and then politically, you can get caught up in these, trade disputes between the U.S. and China that John was referring to, where your particular set of goods, beef in the case of John, get caught because the Chinese want to export their Asian pears to the U.S. and the U.S. won't allow them in, and so you get caught up in that. In addition to that, you can get caught in the even larger political issues between the two countries, the, you know, twists and turns of that relationship. The Chinese are known for having a fair amount of ambiguity in their laws and regulations so that they can adjust based on the political winds of the moment.
They may call it flexibility. let me ask you another question, a little bit different from legal barriers, and that is logistical hurdles, Pete. China's a developing nation, so it's going to have some logistical problems ranging from antiquated distribution systems to a shortage of refrigeration. So how do you overcome some of those logistical hurdles?
Well, you know, they're there. They have some work to do. But I have to tell you, and John, I think, will corroborate this, when the Chinese decide to do something, they'll do it. They'll get it fixed. And as I'm sure you know, their current five-year plan calls for increasing internal consumption. I mean, they're driving their economy more towards local demand and local consumption. And with that comes a requirement that they improve their logistics systems. And I suspect that they'll do the work they need to do.
So, John, even if you get into China, you get your beef over there, then what if it's not refrigerated? How do you deal with that problem?
Well, it does need to be refrigerated because you need a good cold chain and all that. But they are made giant leaps forward in their refrigeration and their food safety, and they're going the right direction as far as the whole supply chain. But they had a ways to go. But still, they have 1.7 billion people. So even if 10% of them, you know, have access to a good refrigeration, is still about as big as here.
It's a pretty staggering number, 1.7 billion. You know, a lot of those are becoming a little more affluent. And so do you think maybe there's an opportunity, John, for San Joaquin Valley products in high-end markets and specialty stores in China, not just because the people are more affluent, but because they've got some concerns over there maybe about food safety in the country's domestic market?
No, it's pretty amazing. I didn't realize the degree of concern that the Chinese people had for food safety and really a distrust of the Chinese goods. I mean, here we're you know, like to think that our local goods are superior to imported things, but over there, they would much prefer an imported food versus Chinese food due to some of the food safety scares that they've had.
Pete, what do you think?
No, absolutely. I heard the same thing that John heard. I mean, they've had some serious food safety concerns and incidents, really, that have made the Chinese buyer very cautious about what they buy. And so that favors us. I mean, they label the origin of their products, and U.S. products are actually in higher demand and command a higher price. And you're right that they're seeing a lot more affluence. You know, one of the guys from the mission actually went to a grocery store where in the grocery store he found just on sale, you know, like a bunch of other products, he found a bottle of Chateauneuf du Pape selling for 16,500 yuan, which is about, 94,500 yuan, which is about $15,000 in a grocery store.
People apparently can afford it. But what about, you know, Pete, we've talked about this before about, you know, labeling San Joaquin Valley products, giving them like a special label, like, you know, Washington apples. You think because of the high quality of San Joaquin produce and products and beef products, that's something that would help the Valley specifically if we branded us our products in a certain way?
You know, sure, that could help. But just being U.S., just being California, you know, is going to give you a price premium in China.
I think some might argue just take California off the label, just say San Joaquin Valley because we're really California ag. Let's turn our attention to tourism. The Valley has a proximity, as everybody knows, to three national parks. What people may not know is that Chinese tourists spend about $1,000 more per day than tourists from other countries. So what do you think the state should be doing to advance tourism in Central California, John? I mean, you've got a nice facility out there at Harris Ranch. What do you think the state should be doing to get more tourists, Chinese tourists, to the Valley?
Well, it's probably more just an education. I think a lot of people don't know about the Valley, and they come to San Francisco, and the Valley doesn't get included on their overall itinerary. But it's something we need to work on with a lot of the tour groups. It is tough because I'd assume that more people from China spoke English, and there's some that do. I mean, much more than we speak Chinese, but I think they might be intimidated coming to an area that they might have a language barrier. So they might, you know, San Francisco or apparently a lot of Las Vegas is supposed to be the biggest destination point for the Chinese, which I found surprising. But I think we just can promote the Valley and find unique things to do here, which we have, obviously, all the national parks and things like that, but more just the, you know, chance to see a type of agriculture we have.
Yeah, I'm thinking there's an opportunity for students learning Mandarin. But beyond that, also, you know, there's a connection between Fresno and Vegas. I don't know why we can't bring some of those tourists to Fresno first, and then they can hop over to Vegas if that's their, you know, desired location. I guess we'll see. Pete, what do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, look, first, just to put this in perspective, Carolyn Beteta, who is the executive director of the California Tourism Commission, has been for several years, was in China on the trade mission with us, and she spent more time in China in the last few years than any other country outside the United States. And it's the results are showing. We had more than half a million Chinese visitors in California last year who spent more than $1.5 billion. That number is expected to exceed $2 billion this year, making China the largest tourism market for us in California. Unfortunately, I don't think the Valley is getting its fair share of that tourism revenue, and that's partly because I don't think the Valley has ever organized itself well as a tourism destination. We've got to do a better job of that.
You know, it's interesting, too, that a lot of those tourism jobs are not necessarily high-skill jobs, frankly, that a lot of our population could do, and that could address the unemployment rate in the region as well. Let's turn our attention to a kind of the flip side of the coin, maybe high-tech. Is there a concern, Pete, about copying or theft of intellectual property if high-tech companies partner with Chinese companies?
Yeah, the bottom line is yes. I think there is a concern. The Chinese very much want access to our intellectual property. For the most part, they try to buy it through the business arrangements they structure with foreign companies, but they're not beyond taking it if they can't buy it. And I'm not suggesting that's sanctioned government policy. It may or may not be, but there's certainly room for the Chinese government to police this with more dedication than they have shown to date.
John, I wanted to ask you about partnering with maybe a Chinese concern in beef or agriculture. Any concern that maybe they might take some of your good ideas and apply them over there?
Not really. I mean, I think it, most of what we do here is pretty transparent. It's just applying it. But I think China does have obviously a lot of capital to put someplace, and I mean they're basically loaning a lot of money to the U.S. and treasury bills and all that. So they're big investors in the U.S. I think that they want to get money into here. So it can benefit agriculture, and I don't. It just depends on how, you know, active or passive they want to be.
You know, you had said recently in a Fresno Bee article that while you're a free trader, historically a lot of people have been a little wary of foreign companies getting too big a foothold. So the question is, how big is too big in terms of investment?
Well, that's a question. I think, and what's really a foothold, I think it's healthy to have foreign investment. The U.S. needs capital for, you know, to grow and do, you know, building up companies and all this. It's just, I think the danger would be that you had ownership by someone that wasn't really involved enough, you know, in the management, but kind of ruled from afar and bad decisions got made that would impact the viability of the business or the security of jobs and all that. So, you know, basically, I'd hate to see China or any foreign country really dominate any certain industry over here, but having some extra capital to work with is welcome.
Okay. Well, Pete, I want to ask you about what you wrote in the Fresno Bee blog while you were over in China. A little bit of a long quote, but let me read it to you. It's instructive to see, you say, the level of commitment that has been made by the Bay Area and L.A. to attract some of that Chinese investment. The San Joaquin Valley has no comparable commitment. This is an issue for the Central California Economic Development Corporations to consider, recognizing that China, in my impression, is a high-risk, high-reward market. Part of the risk is that China will be traversing a perilous path in the next few years, unquote. So, can you elaborate what you meant by that?
Sure, that's a long quote.
It is a long quote. It was a good quote.
So it's okay, that's a two-part question. The first part relates to attracting Chinese investment dollars to the Valley. Chinese investment likes California. Okay, so about one quarter of the $6.7 billion the Chinese invested last year in the U.S. was invested in California, and those numbers are expected to get much bigger. In fact, while we were there, there was an announcement of an investment that Chinese are making in Oakland, $1.5 billion to build 3,100 homes and 200,000 square feet of retail and commercial space. Now, we haven't seen that kind of investment from China in the Valley. Since I returned, I've talked about this with Mayor Swearengen and Leanne Eager of the Fresno Economic Development Corporation. L.A. and the Bay Area are doing a much better job. In fact, the Bay Area Council is getting paid by the Chinese to put together deals between us. Let me talk to the perilous side of the equation here, and that is that the Chinese have their share of problems. I mean, they have very poor return on capital. They have very high internal debt, money that they loan to provinces that the provinces can't pay back. They've got their wage rates have gone up significantly, and so they are now less competitive than they once were. So they got a lot of issues. That, in addition to that, they've got social issues, they've got environmental cleanup issues, and so on. And so, as they traverse through this difficult path, it's politically somewhat risky. The opportunities are great, but the risks are also significant.
On both sides, I guess. Well, up next, what about the imports, and what do we do to address California's trade imbalance with China? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We're talking with Pete Weber, chairman of the Executive Committee of the California Partnership for the San Joaquin Valley, and John Harris, CEO and chairman of Harris Farms. Well, John, let's talk about the trade imbalance. California has a rather massive trade imbalance with China. While California exported $22 billion to China in goods and services, it imported $128 billion from China. So what are the reasons for this massive trade imbalance, and what are the long-term implications, and what can be done to reverse those numbers?
Well, I'd like to see them reversed, or not necessarily cut, but the ratio. Really, what China has done is which is changing. They've had a lower cost of their labor supply was significantly lower than the U.S. is in general, and they were manufacturing things there that could be shipped over here. I mean, you go into a store, you can't really find a shirt or pants or shoes or anything that's made in the U.S. anymore. And a lot of actually China has a problem now because there's even lower labor costs in Indonesia and Bangladesh and here and there. So, but I think California has unique products here that can't be produced other places. I mean, a lot of fruits and vegetables and even beef and are very well liked in China. We think we can increase those exports. And there have been some trade barriers of things like beef, but like almonds and pistachios and wine are definitely getting in there. And their per capita consumption has risen dramatically, and there's much more of a upper middle class there than there were 20 years ago. I think it's going to change.
Pete, what do you think about the trade imbalance? What can be done to change that?
Well, first let me just say that the Chinese are not going to reverse their focus on exports versus domestic demand just to be nice to the West. The good news, however, is that it is in their best interest to do so, and they recognize that, and their five-year plan reflects that. As they move to bolster domestic demand, I think you are going to see an improvement in the trade balance, and that's good for us in the San Joaquin Valley because the Chinese need, the products, as John mentioned, that we make here. In fact, the Chinese need just about everything that California makes.
Well, let's talk about manufacturing then. I mean, California manufacturing has been declining for years. I think now only about 9% of the workforce is engaged in manufacturing. It's probably even less in the San Joaquin Valley. We've got high-speed rail. We've got an increased emphasis on clean energy. Will the green economy, you think, Pete, result in more manufacturing jobs in the San Joaquin Valley?
Look, there's all kinds of manufacturing, okay? So I don't see a rebirth of low-margin, high-volume manufacturing in California. That will continue to take place in countries that have low labor costs and nowhere near the regulatory burdens of California. Now, it may not be China. It may be, as John suggested, Bangladesh or Indonesia or what have you. But it won't be California. But I do see a potential rebirth of high-tech manufacturing based on proprietary manufacturing technology. And of specialty manufacturing. I mean, it makes no sense for us, for example, to, grow onions and garlic and ship them to China and have them dehydrated using coal-fired, dehydrators and then ship back to California. I mean, that makes absolutely no economic or environmental sense. And hopefully we're going to get our state legislators to understand that so that they can put place in policies that prevent that from happening.
That's a great example of a win-win. John, do you want to comment on this at all about California manufacturing? You think it's going to increase as a result of trade with China?
Well, I don't know. It depends on the type. I think really what we think of as traditional manufacturing of, you know, automobiles and things like that, I don't think is going to increase that much here.
You don't think they're going to buy the Tesla over in China?
The Tesla might go with it, but I think anything that we can manufacture here, they can probably manufacture cheaper over there. But I think our things would be, you know, some of the high tech and medical, you know, pharmaceutical type things, and the key I think is ag. But I think we need to develop, you know, products here that are. Somehow we have some higher level of expertise. Although they have very high levels of expertise on all that's over there as well.
I mean, let me ask you, John, about the public sector, rather. As it starts to spend money on buying goods from China, is there going to be a blowback? You can witness the Long Beach decision to purchase 10 electric buses from a Chinese concern for $12 million. There was a lot of criticism from competitors who said that the U.S. taxpayers' dollars should be best spent on U.S. companies. Do you think that criticism is going to resonate in the Valley when high-speed trains are purchased by the state or electric buses are purchased by Valley cities?
I think people want to buy the you know, as long as it's a safe product and the least expensive product they can find. And I think to really have free trade, you can't have say that it's got to be manufactured at a certain point to place to buy it if it meets our standards. So I don't think this whole, you know, buy local thing is really has that much legs.
You know, it's interesting. Most of the criticism was coming from the bidders who lost that bid. But Pete, what do you think? Think there's a political blowback here, essentially?
Look, you know, like John, I'm for free trade. But it also has to be fair trade. The Chinese put all kinds of conditions on our exports to them and conditions on our investments in China. And I think reciprocity is fair game. Having said that, beyond restrictions that are related to national security and product safety, the fewer conditions we impose on each other, the better.
Okay. Well, John, let me ask you.
We do need to get China to play more fair, which is, you know, part of free trade is fair trade, and often we get shortchanged there.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, John. You're on the trip. What do you think? Do you think the governor's trip was a success, or when are we going to know whether the governor's trip was a success?
Well, I think it would take a while. I think it definitely was. And first of all, we need to assure everybody that everyone paid their own way, that the state of California didn't pay any of this.
Could you explain that? Could you explain that? I think the Bay Area Council was involved with this. And
they organized it, but each party to go, you paid all your own travel expenses, plus you gave $10,000 to the Bay Area Council, which covered your, you know, meals and all, and the governors didn't really have too much of a staff there, but then in there they had a few sponsors. But it was all outside money. It wasn't like state of California money going into this. But anyway, it was impressive that the amount of good people that were involved at the state level and also at the embassies, and I know some of the ag attachés that we talked to were very, very capable.
So you think maybe Jerry Brown in the second go-around has got it? He's finally getting it?
Yeah, I think he's always had it. It's just I don't agree on every last thing, but he's definitely the right person in the right place right now.
Pete, what do you think?
Well, look, I think there's, in terms of whether it was a success or not, there's qualitative data that we'll want to track over time, such as whether the Chinese government significantly increases commitment to IP protections. But much more narrowly, I'm going to give you three hard economic metrics to track over the next 5 years. One of them is, did California exports to China increase? The second one is, did Chinese investment in California increase? And the third is, did tourism from China increase? Now, I suspect that the answer to all those is going to be yes. The question that still remains in my mind is the San Joaquin Valley going to get its fair share of all of that? And I think we got to get more, dedicated to this, more committed to pursuing the opportunities coming out of China than we are today.
Okay, we've only got about 30 seconds left in the segment, but John, so if in 15 seconds, is California worth the investment of time and money?
Is China.
California is so productive and produces such a safe, wholesome product that we are a natural supplier of products for China or anybody, and it's just a real simple equation that we're going to be a good things to China.
Pete, about 5 seconds. What do you think?
Look, huge opportunities. It's not for the timid because it takes a lot of investment in building relationships and so on, but huge opportunity.
Well, great. I want to thank John Harris, CEO and chairman of Harris Farms, and Pete Weber, chairman of the executive committee of the California Partnership for the San Joaquin Valley, for joining us. If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, The Matty Daily, by just logging on to our website at mattyinstitute.org.
The Matty Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Matty Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for The Matty Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.